9272 South 96th Street, Franklin, Wisconsin. I have a few questions, maybe concerns. Once again, we're up here rushing to reinstate running the water and whatnot. That's why we're here in the first place. We make some mistakes, we overlook some things. Why would you reinstate when the DNR hasn't even finished the paperwork? They already drew up a plan which was right out of wetlands. You folks did your job and you represented the city of Franklin and you held to our ordinances. All we're asking is they finish, take the extra week of time, which won't be before the June deadline, will still be in May once you get those results. So why rush? We've already been down this road. I'm saying gather all the information first. I mean, last week we heard from planning that if the 75-foot setback were intact, they'd have to move the building a few feet. This week we hear if there's a 75-foot setback, they only have, you know, they have 130 feet or whatever, so they'll be fine. Let's just get the answers. I mean, it makes this whole process harder. You understand what I'm saying?
I do. And just to answer your question, we're not rushing this through. As you heard me explain earlier, the applicant has asked for this meeting. So.
No, I understand. I say we cover all our bases. Otherwise, it's just, I don't want to be here every Tuesday. I love the city and stuff. I know me and you are good buddies. So I mean, let's just do it proper.
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
Could you talk a little bit about I just noticed that map you put up there, so I've been looking at it for a little bit. The line that's showing on the wetland edge, is that the area that might be or could possibly go to navigable 75 feet?
Well, since the survey data just came in later today, I did forward it to staff, but if you look at where I'm drawing here, that's about the area that we're talking about where there could be or where there will be an additional wetland sighted from the DNR concurrence.
Okay.
So we did shoot it with GPS on site. It's very thick in there. The accuracy of the GPS is not acceptable, but it took a while to get a survey crew out there. They're out there today and tomorrow surveying it for all the guidelines. And if I could, I do want to talk a little bit.
Well, I just wanted to clarify. Is that the area that could possibly be the 75-foot area? Because you talked about navigability, and I didn't know which area.
Correct. That is Wetland 13 is the area in question for a navigability study.
Okay. So the setback that's on it now is 50 feet.
Correct.
And that's right at the corner of the building. So
that's correct.
If it became 75.
The building would move south by approximately 18 to 19 feet.
You would still be in the shoreline wetland zone.
No, we would not. We would have the building would move, and the parking lot would move to the south. But if you see the other wetland border here in the south, this is the 50-foot setback from this wetland.
Right, but that one's a 50-foot up above, right? And it's right next
to
the...
Yeah, they're both 50-foot. Right. The wetland is the shaded gray area.
Well, I understand that. But if that one's sitting at 50 right there and it's 75, you have to add 25 feet to it.
I know.
It's going to...
There's
move.
About 100 feet right here. So
okay.
The building and everything
so
could
you
move,
would move
about.
All of the, you would have that extra because... What we're looking at is not the grading plan. If you flip the page and look at the grading plan, it kind of tells a little bit more encroachment. Looking at it, having the building out of it.
They're the same plans. They just identify different resources on them because one shows topography, the other one doesn't. It'd be too messy if we had all of those items on one plan.
Right.
But they're the exact same
plan.
But
in order to see what would impact the buffer zone, you actually have to turn to the grading plan to see that. That's what I was trying to point out. So you can have the building out of the buffer, but then once you look at the grading plan, you can see the silt fence is actually in the 50-foot setback on that one. So you're
that is correct.
Good.
So to explain the difference between a buffer and a setback.
You don't have to explain
okay.
the difference to me about that. I'm pretty clear.
Okay. Then I'm confused on the question, I guess.
Well, you have to have enough setback. So you're not in a navigable buffer.
Correct. So this 50-foot setback now, if right. this is determined navigable, mm-hmm. wetland 13, this setback now becomes 75 feet.
Yep.
So 25 feet further this way. Mm-hmm. On this side of the building, I have approximately 100 feet to the next wetland. And I have a lot of open area in here to move the building that other 25 feet away. And we're all talking about hypothetical that if they came back with...
Oh, I'm, I know. I just want to make sure that, you know, because a lot of people don't know when they look at a natural resource plan to flip over and look at the grading plan to actually see the true impacts are based on a grading plan and not where just the building is. So I just wanted to make sure that was clear.
Correct. And we can grade within the setback, just not within the buffer.
On a wetland buffer, correct. But shoreline is 100% protected.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
All right, I see Mr. Salmon still standing here, so
we have no solid information from the DNR still, correct?
Mr. Deal.
No, sir. Thank you.
Or yes, sir.
No, I just want to talk about that a little bit because I go through a lot of projects. I've been through projects here in Franklin with wetlands on them, preparing to propose another project that has wetlands on. You guys know you live here. It's hard to find a property in the city that doesn't have wetlands on it. This would be the first time I've ever heard of someone asking for concurrence from a consultant to hold up a planning item. The items you're talking about get approved by staff. Staff is very thorough. I mean, between Joe and Nick, you guys have a couple of the best planners in southeastern Wisconsin that work for you. I mean, I work with all the different cities around and municipalities. These guys are as thorough as anybody is. Those are items for staff because, I mean, overall, the site plan and everything, we don't wait for concurrence. If you really want to keep projects moving, it's not that we're rushing it through. It's that it doesn't impact it. I mean, if all of a sudden the DNR came back and said wetland 13 is 5 times the size that it is now, I'm not going to be able to build my building. I still have to get a building permit. So your approval at the council doesn't negate the fact that I have to still abide by all of the rules. So it's not that we're trying to get away and rush something through and not do something right. It's just that it doesn't matter because I still have to abide by the rules. I'm not trying to break the rules by not waiting for a DNR concurrence, which would not be typical for any municipality to require. I mean, they empower third-party consultants like the people at Excel Engineering with proper training and proper methodology to delineate wetlands that they can go do that, and we can make plans from that. If I wanted to wait for the DNR or Army Corps to come concur on every item before I went through this process, because developing buildings takes a lot of time, and this is a step in the process that we don't do at the very end. Does that help answer your question a little bit?
Yeah. All we're looking for is the information. And then I caught a little earlier, 7 hours of nursing care. Under Wisconsin state statute, I believe it's 50.011G, CBRF says it allows no more than 3 hours of nursing care per week per resident. Can you guys touch on that? And if this qualifies or if this would be a different type of facility? Anything of that nature?
No, you're exactly right. In terms of the 7 hours, that would be the amount of time that the nurse would be there each day. But they're not going to, those residents, exactly right, do not need to be in a long-term skilled nursing facility. They require less nursing care than that provides for. So, yes, you're correct. Each resident will not have more than 3 hours of nursing care.
And that brings up a new legal issue. I just want to point out that municipalities don't get to put additional requirements beyond the CBRF code. Whether it's 3 hours or 100 hours will be determined by the state when it does its surveys, and obviously they got to follow all the state rules. So that's going to be up to the state.
I have another question. What happens if, I'm not accusing you of anything, what happens if the facility becomes problematic? I'm not saying it will. What options do we have as citizens to hold you responsible, either at the state level or the local level or anything like that? I'm not wishing you any ill will, but I think the more we're informed, I think it'd make the process a little easier and acceptable to everyone in this room.
I kind of feel like I'm being cross-examined here, but I'm happy to answer these questions. The answer is that CBRFs are a highly regulated area. I represent different CBRF owners. And the state can come in and say there was some kind of failure of care. They can require the provider to make changes, spend money, do everything. And so if there's ever a concern, the Division of Quality Assurance, I've seen them get an anonymous call at 8 o'clock at night and be there the next morning to do an investigation. The state The state is extremely serious about its CBRF regulations.
Ms. Benning.
If I could add just one thing.
Sure, absolutely.
We completely agree with you in terms of communication and collaboration with our neighbors in the larger community. We will establish a community advisory committee, and we'd invite any of the residents that want to be a part of helping these folks live successfully in our community. And you'll hold us accountable. You'll be part of the decision-making process. You'll be able to see that we're maintaining all of the requirements of a community-based residential facility.
Folks, please. Sir? Thank you.
Angie Benning, 9272 South 96th Street. You guys told us when we had our neighborhood meeting with you that you wanted to be good neighbors. Did you not? I mean...
We do.
Then why does it change every time we hear something? First it was, they're disabled. Then they're not disabled. Then they're from mental health. And you told us at the meeting that these people require one-on-one care 24 hours a day. Now, a few minutes ago, you just told us that third shift, there's going to be 2 to 3 workers there. Well, that's not one-on-one care. If you have 5 beds and 5 people, that's not one-on-one care. So what is it? Like, what is the truth? Like, why does it change every 5 minutes?
I checked my notes about this earlier today. We told everybody at the community meeting that we're going to be 2 to 3 staff on third shift when everybody is asleep. And first of all, the question is whether the state will approve that. I believe they will approve that. I would rather my tax dollars weren't going to watch people sleep. And then in the morning, additional staff comes on, and it comes on in stages.
We did record that meeting, and you did tell us that it was one-on-one care, 24 hours a day. I mean, we have a copy of the tape. If you want it, I can send it to you. But I guess I'm not going to get a response on that, so... I will go to something else I wanted to talk about then. If I wanted to put a home on this property where you're building this CBRF, with knowing that the DOT has a potential road going through the property, the city would have never allowed me to build a home there, just so you are aware. And they would have never allowed me to stop the water halfway through the property. They would have made me extend it to the end. So I'm not sure why, just because you're funded by Milwaukee County, you guys are getting special treatment. But you should be treated the same as any of us residents, whether the city does have to pay a little bit of our tax dollars to run the water to the end of the property or not. You should not be treated any different than the rest of us.
Mr. Deedle, there was a comment relative to the city and whether... would stop development under the same circumstances.
Our normal process is to require the applicant to contact the DOT to find out what their plans for their roads are. If it's imminent, it would be an important factor, one of the factors in the Plan Commission decision. If it's early in the stages like this, it is not an important factor. Their plans change too often, their time frames change too often. We would not require this as a condition. We do require in all instances they contact the DOT, consider whatever stage their planning is in, but if it's not imminent, it's not typically a strong condition.
Thank you.
Or a factor.
Anyone else wishing to ask a question?
The water. The water. The water issue.
Mr. Morrow?
As we discussed, the actual city code says that the Board of Water Commissioners has the ability to decide when and where water should stop. This was brought before the Board of Water Commissioners, a lengthy discussion, and as my recollection is, probably what seemed to weigh the most was the fact that they had to go so far just to get water. It was different than having just to go to the edge of their property line to acquire water. So I believe that was the major reason why they decided that they were okay with giving a variance in this regard. They did not give the variance. They brought that to City Council with the recommendation that they grant the variance. And, of course, City Council granted that.
Anyone else have a question for the applicant?
I do want to clarify something about the water in that, correct me if I'm wrong, Glenn, but it's not an actual variance because it's just extending a water main to the end of a property is something that has been done in practice prior, but is not actual part of the city code as it applies to one lot without subdividing it. So it was looked at from the perspective that it is not required by code. If we were subdividing this parcel into a subdivision of 10 homes, then we would be required to extend it to the edge of the last CSM division. So it's not an actual variance. It was just they looked at the amount in a specific project like they would do with any other project when extending a water main and say, these people are extending the water main 1,000 feet. Their property is 1,000 feet long. They have to go this far to get it. This makes sense for the city to do this.
If I could elaborate, it's a fine distinction. City code allows Board of Water Commissioners to dictate exactly where and when water lines would be truncated. Policy supported by Board Commissioners has always been that it be extended to the edge of the property.
Folks.
That's why in this case we took it to Board of Water Commissioners. They thought about the reasons. They realized the benefit of having a private developer bring it most of the way to them. And again, for the reason, the fact that you didn't have to just go to your property line to obtain water. You had to go three or four properties away, bring it across a major trunk highway, and that got us closer to an area that we see being developed to the South Long Ryan Road sometime in the future. So they saw that as a benefit. That's why they made a recommendation that the council approve it.
Anyone else with a question? Mr. Ryan.
Tom Harang again, 9147 South 92nd. Mr. Mayor, for clarification, if the project does get the okay, I would greatly appreciate if we could have no parking signs on the west side of 92nd, being a narrow rural street. Right now, two cars meet, that's it. There is no shoulder. And we, all of us, do cut the grass right up to the edge of the road and maintain our ditches.
Thank you.
And I've already chased people, you know, because they drive down in the ditch thinking that they're whatever. So I would appreciate if we could get that taken care of if this project does go forward, because construction workers, I do it for a living too, and we park, you know, wherever. So,
are you suggesting permanent no parking?
No,
or
I'm
just
talking about as long as the construction process is going, until they can get their people in on their property, which isn't always the best.
It's a reasonable request, thank you.
And I think you understand that.
Yep.
Now I've got a question for Matt Talbot. Could someone explain to me who is Talbot? I know he's dead since, what, 19 or 25 or whatever it's been.
Sure.
So, I mean, I tried to find something about you people, and it's very difficult. And I had my wife look, who is a very knowledgeable computer, and still financial records or anything is all hidden. It's like, you know, secret passages, and I mean, we don't know anything about you.
Sure.
You've never explained Matt Talbot, you know, to any of us. I mean, the county didn't do it, the lawyer didn't do it, you didn't do it, you know, common council didn't do it for us. So somebody should explain to us who
Sure.
we're dealing with.
Truly. Matt Talbot Recovery Services has been in business since 1966. We've been providing community-based residential facilities in Milwaukee County since day one. We operate a variety of different behavioral health care programs. We do work with folks with mental health issues. We work with folks who have substance abuse issues. We have folks with physical disabilities. We work with sex offenders coming back into the community. That's not this program. That's not this facility. But we work with a variety of different people who are living or returning to the community, and we want them to be able to live successfully. In order to do that, we hire quality staff. We provide them with fair compensation and training, and we make sure that, you know, all of our residents are taken care of under extreme amount of scrutiny from both our county partners and our state licensing folks.
But who is Matt Talbot? You haven't, I mean, who are the, who's behind you? I mean, that's what I want to know. I you keep saying the same thing over and over. You could be Bill Clinton's partner.
So he's asking who owns you?
I want to know who the financial people are for Matt Talbot. I mean, is there a list of people? Are there, who is it?
And I'm just curious, how would that help?
How would that help? It would give us residents some basis of knowing who we're dealing with besides who? The lawyer?
Well, the point
no,
I'm...
I
want
to know who's behind it.
Let's ask a question, answer a question. Let's try to be respectful.
And my point is just, I don't think you ask for the corporate structure and who owns what and all and whatever financial stuff he wants for everybody who comes in here, and so we don't want to be treated in a special way,
folks. Okay, anyone else?
My name is Kelly Clark, 9211 South 92nd Street. My property faces where they want to build. As I discussed in the meeting we had at the police station, I am a regional director for a company that manages CBRFs, and I find it very disrespectful for the kind of interactions that we have had with you guys. I think that listening to you guys constantly say you want to be good neighbors, yet we are constantly bad-mouthed in the newspaper. We're listening to whether it's true or not, that people are trying to just rush things through without us being notified of things. When we are opening a new program, whether we're opening, repurposing, building, we take the community into consideration, and we are good neighbors. You guys have lied to us numerous times since that last meeting that we had where you guys took out the basketball because you were going to have individuals that were disabled, and now we're on to mental health one-to-one. We are not opposed to you guys coming in. We're opposed to the constant mistrust we have with you, the lies that you tell us, and everything continuously changing. And I think it's very hard for me just moving into the neighborhood when I moved into Franklin thinking it was a good neighborhood. And honestly, it's very hard for me to feel safe in my neighborhood knowing that the people we have elected are constantly allowing us to be bad-mouthed, not sticking up for us, not having questions answered. We had this question and answer at the police department, and the attorney was overheard saying, don't answer the questions, just try and go around them. These are all things that we have on tape, but nobody is willing to address it but us. We stand up here time and time again, waiting for you guys to be good neighbors. You don't address any questions. If you're having one-to-one staff that we have at our programs, they're usually on a commitment because we also take people from Milwaukee Behavioral Health. So I'm wondering, are these people on a commitment? Because if they're on a commitment, that commitment does expire, which means the turnover will be constant that we'll be having there. And if they are one-to-one, that also means that these people are elopement risk, which you said you're going to be having anklets on them. You guys cannot do anything, though. Your one-to-one can follow them, but they're welcome to roam wherever they want. They can go into our yards. They can do whatever they want. A one-to-one cannot lay hands on them. So I guess my question is, what is the point of having this one-to-one? What are we going to do when these people are out?
It's quite a list. First of all, I'm remembering from the audio of the April 7th meeting that the concern was that it had been discovered that these were going to be people with mental illness. And we said at the public meeting, and we've said every time we've gotten a chance, that these are people with a primary diagnosis of mental illness. That is a disability. They are disabled, and some of these folks are double disabled. The ones who are in their early 60s have got, as is often the case with people with mental illness, earlier onset of the difficulties of aging. There's a simple legal answer to the question of what's the legal status of these folks, and the answer is that committed patients on one-year commitments are not in the skilled nursing units at the Behavioral Health Division. Those folks are under protective placements, which are permanent. They're not one-year orders. And so that's going to be the type of legal situation that they have.
Mr. Say Metallica, that again, Mr. Plato, because frankly, I didn't understand.
Okay. If somebody is not decisional...
And let's do this a different way.
Yeah.
What is the classification of the individuals in this building?
They have a primary diagnosis of mental illness. And long-term chronic mental illness, as you've heard, some of these people have been in this place, BHD, for one of them for more than 10 years, another for a little less than 10 years. And they've all been there for at least a couple of years. So that's serious mental illness.
Is that a court-ordered protective placement for them to be there? That's what we keep asking, and you guys refuse to answer our questions.
I don't recall you asking that at the last meeting.
We asked it at the last meeting.
I believe they are under court-ordered protective placements to BHD. And then the other thing I will say is, I had a conversation with somebody from the county, and I don't remember whether it was Mr. Matthew or somebody else, where the issue is we can't, by law, tell you details about these folks. And so if that's what you heard me say, that's what I said. And so we're trying to give you as much information as possible, and we're giving you accurate information about here's, in general, these are the five people that they're thinking about for this facility.
I guess, just in closing, again, I would ask that you guys be respectful to us and you guys stop telling the lies to us. Like I said, where the population has changed several times even since we have started to attend it. If you want to be good neighbors, you have to build the trust, and you guys have not built the trust, and we're not going to respect you, and we're not going to trust anything you say when everything you guys say keeps changing. All we are asking is that you guys are honest with us and that everything stays the same. Not a constant change on what's going to be happening. That's all we're asking. Not to be bad-mouthed in the newspaper. Yeah. We would never do something like that at my company. And frankly, it's appalling to me that your company would even allow that to happen, because that just makes the neighborhood look bad in general.
Yeah, I'm certainly not aware of anybody within our company having any discussion about any of the residents.
I have the letter from the lady from the Journal Sentinel. It was from a waiver sent by the Mr. Attorney there.
Read it. Folks, please. Anyone else wishing to speak?
Yeah, Mayor, I'd like to make a comment.
Let's hear from the citizens. Miss, please, come forward.
Could I make a comment?
Angela Walter, 9242 South 96th Street. And I just kind of, that's what I was going to say, basically, was the same thing. My issue really has nothing to do with any of you gentlemen that are sitting at this table in front of me. If it truly is a mental health facility, regardless of the reason why they're there, I don't think a lot of us really have an issue with that. I think the biggest issue is our own community and how you guys handled it from the start. That is our issue. So therefore, it has trickled down into this big night. It's almost embarrassing to be in front of you guys. You know, yes, I agree. I feel that there's a lot of not honest things or things that you guys are trying to not speak on in details to maybe ease some of our fears, which is a concern. But I think my issue, other than with a certain older woman, is you guys. I think you guys have handled this very poorly for us.
Anyone else wishing to speak?
Mayor, could I comment?
Alderwoman Wilhelm.
I would be interested in seeing the letter, because in the Journal Sentinel I was quoted as leading the charge on the opposition on the city council. And what I have to say that is, any one of you that have been to any meeting knows that I have treated you no different than any other development, that I always ask a lot of questions. And I don't want it to be seen as leading any charge on any opposition, because that's not the case. I also wanted to address the fact that this keeps being made into a handicap issue. I know that always works well, but that is not the issue for me. It never has been an issue for me. It's always been about the questions the citizens have asked, rightfully so. We have now found out there has been a missed wetland that wouldn't have came about even with all these experts had the citizens not asked that question. We're also finding out that a DOT road, which could have maybe been shorter and less costly for the state, will now have to be moved and will now have to impact wetlands when it shouldn't have had to impact wetlands. So this is land use for me and not about handicap. I hope I'm very clear on that. And I'm not leading any charge. I just want to make sure that we are addressing citizens' complaints and answering their questions for them.
Thank you.
And sure, I can say that I did not say anything specifically about you, Alderman Wilhelm. I don't know where that, well, perhaps someone listened to the tapes and drew that conclusion.
Sir.
Brian Raddix, 9273 South 96th Street. Back to the water issue. If I was a property owner of 14 acres, what would be the requirement if I wanted water run to that property? I would have to run it all the way down to the farthest end of the property. Is that correct or incorrect?
Mr. City Engineer. The answer is it depends.
Is that the policy of the City of Franklin?
As I mentioned, that's a policy of the City of Franklin, and the Board of Water Commissioners has the authority, and I believe that the exact language is sole authority to make that decision. And they discussed it, and it was their recommendation that it was stopped short because there are other benefits to the city, and that's why they recommend the City Council that you approve it.
Okay, there is one residence that abuts the south end of this property, and there's three other properties south of this development here. What about those residents if they want water? You're stopping it at their project, not even giving them an opportunity.
If this project not occurred, you would have to go substantially
further.
But
it is occurring. They want to be treated just like any regular homeowner. If I was a regular homeowner that owned it, I'd be required to run it all the way down to the farthest end of the property. They want to be treated just like a residence. They don't want to be looked at as a business or anything else like that. So what's the special treatment then?
Special treatment is that you would have to appear before the Board of Water Commissioners just like they did, discuss the case, discuss the pros and cons, and convince them that it's a good thing to do.
That's special treatment.
So, Mr. Adams, if the three residents would like water, talk to
There's
all
four of them.
I'm sorry, four. If they would like water, speak with Alderwoman Mayor, and we'll get you on the docket and do the procedure. Well, that's you said they wanted water. If they want water, let's go.
I'm not saying that they do want water. If I was a regular resident and I bought that property and wanted water run down there, it's city policy to run it to the end of the property. Correct or not correct?
There have been exceptions where that has not happened.
How many?
Give me one.
Victor DeLamb.
They also were instructed that they'd have to give a piece of their parcel, otherwise run it all the way. Would these gentlemen be...
Wait.
Sorry, I'm going to cut you off.
Okay, the Victor DeLamb deal, supposedly there was supposed to be something also put on there that at a later date they would have to run the water down to the end of their property.
Absolutely.
So it's, you know, where's the consistency?
The same clause applies here.
That's what we're asking.
The same exact clause is in this document as well. If at some point the water needs to be extended to those four homes, they'll pay their assessment. Absolutely.
And what's to stop this development for subdividing that property and selling that land to another CBRF?
Mr. Dito.
And putting another CBRF in? On the other 7 acres.
I don't know if I can, but Mr.
Well, basically the comment was made that there's supposedly a rule anywhere from 2,500 to 3,000 feet, and the attorney says if that's the case, we'll sue. And that's basically been the case, his attitude, since this whole thing has started. You don't give us what we want, we're going to sue you.
You asked a zoning question, Mr. Deedle.
From a planning and zoning standpoint, they would go through the same process these people did. The distance issues, I think that would be a legal question.
Now, your answer relates to if there was another CBRF proposed, just to be clear.
Generically, yes. Anywhere in the city.
Okay, the city attorney, can you answer that question?
Mr. Attorney.
I'd like to know if, as of today, site plan information, whether or not, from an engineering planning standpoint, there's room for another building.
That raises two issues. One is, right now, the Common Council has rescinded its approval of the water main extension. Plan Commission rescinded its approval of the site plan. So there is no project here. So if there was another proposal, the distance wouldn't come into effect. The other standpoint is, without seeing the final wetland delineations on the south, I don't know how much room, but we do have a variance process. If the building had to encroach into setbacks or buffers, we do have a variance process that is not unfrequently used.
So if there's a law that states this, it's basically doesn't hold any water.
What law?
That you can't build another CBRF within 25 to 3,000 feet of an existing one.
Well, as they stand right now, this project has no approval. It wouldn't be within 3,000
feet. If they get their approval and all the rest of the stuff, that's what I'm trying to ask you.
Yeah, that I believe would be a legal question.
Then it resorts back to the attorney.
I'd like to know from the project engineer what his answer might be to the current state of what he understands the site plan to be. Because I saw him shaking his head no with regard to...
So as you can see, this represents the south side of the property. The parcel, or the area that can be developed, is the part that's in white. Everything else that's shaded represents wetlands or mature tree areas. Basically, all the areas that we are going to go ahead and protect on the site as part of our natural resource protection plan, so those can never be touched again. The DNR did find more seasonal wetlands on this side of the property, so once we have all those surveyed, the south side of this property is going to be extremely hard to develop, even for a single-family home, let alone a facility like this, likely after we're done here. So. As of today, if they didn't find any other wetlands, yes, you could develop something down there. But the process has to go through a CSM to subdivide the property first, because in an R3 occupancy, we can only have one structure on the site. So it would have to be subdivided prior to doing that.
Okay. And I'll just throw in here that part of our thinking about the water main extension is that, indeed, the bottom half of the property may well never be developed for those reasons. And then Matt Talbot did look at the cost factor, and they wouldn't have gone ahead with this project unless they could come up with some kind of intermediate extension of the water main. They got approval for the partial water main, not the full water main, and that's why they bought the property. So Matt Talbot would be in a really bad spot right now if he went back on the water main extension. So that's the issue for us.
Any other?
Do you guys currently own the property?
Yeah, we bought the property a few days after the plan commission because we had all the approvals we needed.
Is there any contingencies on that, or you own it outright?
We own it outright.
Is there any particular reason why you would buy so much land when you can only develop what you're developing?
Well, again, we've talked about it a lot of times. This is a great site. It has a lot of land on it. It has a lot of natural resources on it. So I think we've talked about this a lot of times and why we selected the site. So.
Okay.
Thank you, sir.
I'll just read my response from the journal quick.
says, hi, Joel, sorry for the delay in getting back to you. I've been all day on another assignment. The information from the story came from the tapes of the meetings and the letter that the lawyer from Ann Talbot sent to the city, and also talked to some city officials. So there's where the slandering article came from. That may be. We have the article here as well. You talked about the church and that they would not be allowed to run the water all the way down. There was a, whether you want to call it a contingency or whatnot, that they could possibly donate the land in the future. Would these gentlemen be interested in setting up something with the state where maybe if a future road went through the state, we'd have easy access, or maybe not get raked over the coals on price, something like that?
I think you've gone through this already, but I want to make sure I understand. There is going to be a buffer, that is land that Matt Talbot has to keep the trees on, right? And
correct.
Where is that on this?
No, I'm not talking about a buffer. I understand. The church that was in here, since they didn't run the water all the way through, they asked to set up like a conservancy or something of that nature. Would you guys be willing to do something like that on the southern half that's maybe undevelopable or...
We have a really large, so everything on this drawing that's shaded is going to be set aside in a conservancy easement on the property. It's really large. I don't remember what the percentages are, but it's the percentages are a lot higher than even what the city requires for this type of development.
Anyone else? Should give us your name, yes.
Angie Walter, 9242 South 96th Street. I was just curious for you guys, do you guys have daily, weekly, food deliveries, laundry services, supply trucks? Because 92nd and Highway 100 or St. Martin's Road, whatever you want to call that, is a nightmare for me to get out of my neighborhood in the morning. So I'm just curious as to how much traffic you guys will be bringing in here, besides for your staff and visitors, and that's what I would like to know.
Correct. Yeah, I mean, as you obviously we indicated, on average there's about 5 staff people on, so that would be part of the traffic that would be encountered. Not that much different than any other single family residential home. We do not have a bunch of deliveries. In fact, typically what we do is have everything centrally brought to some of our other facilities, and then it's distributed to each of the locations based upon their existing meal plans and things like that. So it's not...
Laundry's done
in-house. They have their own laundry facility, yeah.
So medical supplies and stuff like that, you guys don't have trucks that come to...
No, not at all. FedEx. We use FedEx and Amazon quite a bit.
Medication supply truck. I mean, we're not going to see these big delivery trucks...
Not at all.
...in and out of our neighborhood.
Not at all.
Yes, sir.
Good evening. Michael Fleece, 9147 and 9205 South 92nd Street. Could you go back 3 maps, please? There was a map that was up here when I walked in. I have a question about that map. No, the next map prior to that that you guys had.
What did you want to see, sir?
My question was, may I approach?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I thought that...
As long as you're nice.
One of the maps showed the water leaving this spring. That's what this is, a spring. It showed it, but it wasn't a connected line. Does the water go into the ground?
It's on that map over there. It's on the map that's right up there on the corner. Yes, that's. I believe it's on that one.
These are
yeah.
DOT maps.
Right, they actually show a previous wetland delineation, which doesn't really match what
there.
They have.
There's a break.
It's a map from 1997. It's a very poor quality. It's a copy of a lot of them. I don't know. It's 1997. It's not our map.
It's not his map, sir.
It's a water track.
And the other question I have is, this is seasonal. This spring, it contracts in a dry year, and it expands in a wet year. Do you guys have contingencies if that expands? If there's excessive rainfall, will you change your buffer? Will you adapt to that? Thank you.
Yeah, that's why they set up buffer yards and setbacks is for the expansion contraction of these areas. Our finished floor height of our building from that low wetland, so the high part of the big wetland you're talking about, our finished floor height of our building is 6 feet higher than that. So, I mean, there would be, you'd have to have a much higher than a 100-year flood to even come close to it. So,
yes, sir, please, yes. Name and address.
New to this, it's my first meeting I've been to for this. My name is Martin Gels. I'm at 9351 South 92nd. First question I have, how many visitors approximately do any come? I see the parking lot's relatively large. Is there going to be or any visitors whatsoever? The other question I had, I'm sure all police officers have some sort of training with people like this. Obviously, you have a horrible situation like Dontre Hamilton. You don't want that to happen.
That's correct.
So one of these guys might get away from his one-on-one care person and wander down the street. Police stops the guy. Something goes down. Do the Franklin police have the proper training they need? I'm sure they know about this project. Will we have to supply them with some additional training? And then the last kind of comment question I had is the very first thing I heard from the presentation was that a lot of these people are in this almost for life and will pass away in this place. But then later on in the presentation, we try to rehab them and enter them back into society. So I'm just wondering, do they die there, or do we fix them, you know, try to get them better and re-enter them into society? Those are my 3 points.
Okay. Taking the last one first, we see this as them being in the community. This is a home. So, yes, they will live there. If they need less care and can live independently, obviously that's the goal for everybody. The goal with anyone with disability is to provide them care in the least restrictive fashion possible. There's that. The second thing, obviously, we'll work in partnership with Franklin Police or anybody else to make sure, as well as our community advisory committee, to make sure that, you know, we're communicating and working collaboratively to make sure that the community is safe and that our staff and residents are safe.
Very good. And then the visitor.
Yeah, in terms of visitation, many of these clients or patients have not a lot of support. That's why they need this in the first place. So most of them don't have any family or friends visiting them. And if they do, we'll have scheduled visitation times. We'll listen to our community advisory committee tell us when those times would be most optimal so it doesn't impact other things. You know, if you know it's really busy because of whatever other businesses are there at, you know, 3 in the afternoon on a Saturday, then we won't do it on a 3. You know, we want to be good neighbors. And I want to emphasize that again. We understand people's concerns. These concerns are legitimate and understandable, but I don't believe they're going to find them to be valid in the long run.
The last thing I wanted to say, I understand it's kind of a voluntary meeting that you didn't have to come to, and I do thank you for coming here. It's nice that you didn't have to, that you did.
Thank you.